This is episode 8 of the KBB Unstoppable Business Owner podcast. Today I'm joined by Mark Conacher from SenseTech. You don't want to miss this one.
Welcome to the KBB Unstoppable Business Owner podcast. This podcast is dedicated to helping KBB business owners become unstoppable, becoming exit ready with higher profits and more time to work on their business rather than just in it. Let me introduce you to your host, Kevin D. Bannister.
Welcome to episode 8 with Mark Conacher. So today we're jumping in with Mark just to chat around his journey as a business owner and some of the pitfalls that he faced and some of the good things that came out of this as well. So Mark, let's hear from you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started on your business journey.
You know, after 38 years in construction and installation, and I'm on business for 30 of those years, and I decided at the end of last year to step down from Liberty and take a new career path. So my name is Mark Conacher, and I am Managing Director of SenseTech USA. SenseTech is a world-leading anti-slip shower tray, and now it's my job to spearhead our expansion into the US market and tell everybody about it and how wonderful a product it is.
So it's great to have you here. And I know that you've got a lot of insights as a business owner across the years that you've been in business as well. So I'm really glad you were happy to come along.
No, really good.
I know you've been in the KBB industry for many years. Give us a little bit of background in terms of, I suppose, where you started.
Yes, 15, 16. Worked my way through that, worked with a local business. And my journeyman at that time, around about 94, had decided to retire. And one of those was, at that time, an opportunity came across to start installing for MFI. But to do that, obviously, I had to be self-employed and create a business. And so I thought, why not? Let's do this. So I started my business just as a sole trader and did that for a number of years until bringing in various staff members and people in either subcontracting, all the trades round about the installation for plumbing and electrics, tiling, things like that. I always use subcontractors for that side of things, but I would have young guys come in and be it labourers, if you want, and come and work for me. And then I'd also bring in joiners when we were really busy, so I'd subcontract other fitters to come in. And so I did that for a number of years, and then MFI went bust in, what was that, the end of 2008. So that was an interesting time. Again, from a business point of view, of suddenly what I learned very quickly was that all my eggs were in one basket here. I was getting all my work from one source, and now it's gone. And oh, by the way, nobody knows who you are. So that was a really big learning curve. And also, by the way, you've just lost thousands because they went under owing you money. And so there's all of this going on. It's like, you know what?
When MFI went bust, did you realize that you had all your eggs in one basket and that there was a big problem? Or was it a case of, I just need to get a job again or just get going again?
No, I very much realized instantly. And it was, oh my God, it was just a dawning. Obviously a dawning. No, you knew, where's my work coming from? Oh yeah. So I knew that it was sink or swim. And so I thought, you know what, I need to get past Christmas. I need to stop, take time and just think, don't panic. And then start the new year. And I thought, right, I can't get back into that situation again. A joiner in the area. But then again, I knew the comfort of contract work with the big sheds, and it was work. So I thought, you know what, I do need to get back into that again, because that gives me a cushion to do that while I'm starting to try and put myself out there. And so I got involved with Wix and just built it up from there and started getting a mix of my own work, private work. The problem was, at that time, a lot of these sheds and other were really reluctant for you advertising or putting yourself out there as a local joiner or kitchen fitter, or at least that's what I, there was always a lot of pressure that, well, you only work for us. But I did that for a while. And then, you know what, obviously in hindsight, looking back, it unsettled me and more than I thought, because ultimately in 2010, I moved to Vancouver in Canada. So that was from basically 2009, and I moved in the summer of 2010. So that there was a year period where where I was obviously unsettled.
Oh, I knew, obviously, you moved out to Vancouver, but I didn't realize it was that quick, actually.
After that, it obviously really did affect me more than I thought. It's only looking back that I realized that. And I needed maybe a bigger, fresh start, if you want, than I thought I did. But moving over here was, again, I had the realization of that, wait a minute, I've got this business and there's all these people make money off of what I did. How do you just walk away and see you guys? And I mean, I'm all right, Jack. And that didn't sit well at all. There was something about that. And I ran speak to him. I'm like, oh my God. Oh. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try and keep this boy. I'm going to bring somebody in and get them to run it. And I thought, he could run it. And I don't know what I'll do. Well, let's just get it running so I can step away, do what I'm going to do, move to Canada, and then we'll review it. And that's kind of what happened. And I brought in a local guy that I knew. And he started doing the day-to-day and doing the installs and going to see the jobs. And what that did was that allowed me to then focus. I had to find what I want to do. But what it did was it gave me a lot of time to then focus on the business and look at it from a different point of view, which is when you're a sole trader, juggling so many balls and you're just tackling everything. And so this gave me an opportunity to sit back and look at things. And so, you know, I did that for a number of years. We carried on and we brought in contracts and we probably, you know, just, I don't know, maybe pretended we were doing well. But we probably did it for about, I think it must have been about 2017. Now, don't get me wrong, it worked. It did it. It gave me a wage. It gave him a wage. It paid all these different people. So it was creating money and creating all these jobs. But around about 2017, we sat down and we're like, where are we going? It's not going anywhere. And actually, no, I'll jump back a second to 2014. We'd gotten really successful and we'd take that successful as in volume of work and took on all these fritters and we had jobs going on everywhere. And it just, oh my God, it just crashed and burned. It was just, we just ended up with a million problems. And that was quite interesting that you don't actually realize, well, the more work you get, the more problems you get as well. So you've got to keep control of that. And so your processes at the beginning have to be spot on so that when you grow that these kinds of things are under control.
It comes down to that kind of thing, that looking to scale the business as opposed to just growing it for the sake of it.
Yeah. And that was the naivety. That's all we were doing. Can you do this job? Yes. Problem. Yeah. Okay. You know what? All I could say was yes. I didn't know how to say no. It took me a long time to learn how to say no.
Once you get to a point where you feel comfortable to say no, all of a sudden you're in a situation where you can say no and then kind of go, okay. And then the next job comes along and you go, we're happy to do that, but we want to charge more than what we were charging before. And then you kind of recondition yourself a little bit. It takes a while for most businesses to realize that because we're kind of in a world where everything's very fast paced now. So it's all sales grow. And the problem with that is, like you say, growing comes with problems. Doesn't matter what industry, what business it is, you will have more problems the more you try to grow.
Absolutely. I think that, just trying to control that, you don't realize just how difficult it can be. What I learned was price is a great way to control that. By putting your prices up, you were earning the money that you were earning, but you were reducing the number of customers. And when you reduce the number of customers, that gives you space for more customers paying at a higher price. So that was a bit of the learning curve as well. But I got to 2017 but I was just going round and round and round in the circle and not really getting anywhere. There was just this, that taking on more work and just taking on more problems. And so 2017, I sat down and had a serious thought about how do I change things? And I thought, well, I know what I know, but there's a whole lot of there I don't know. Made a difference to me was he spoke about standing out, that you had to be different to everybody else, or you're just going to be, part of the mix. But one of the first things he spoke about was he started getting into this 80-20 split, if you want. Is it Pareto principle, I think it's called. So, and he said, when you started in business, everybody starts out in businesses, they've got all these grand plans and everything's going to be great. But the reality of it is that in any business, in any sector, it splits down in five. And you can create a pyramid out of this. But at the bottom of that pyramid, there's 20% of businesses are going nowhere. They're struggling. They're barely getting by. Level up there is there 60% of businesses are, you know what? They're making payroll. They're just turning over. They're doing the day-to-day. But they certainly don't have the business that they set out, that they were going to set this world on fire. And then above them, you've got around about 14% who, you know what? Yeah, things are starting to click. They're starting to go somewhere. Things are starting to work. It's looking good. Above that, you've about 4% that's, you know, they are on their way. They're skyrocketing. And then you've got the 1% right at the top who have made it. So when you look at that pyramid, you end up at the very bottom with this 20% who aren't doing anything or struggling, and at the 60% that's just getting by. So that was 80% of people who are pretty much getting it wrong. So we've got 80-20. And that set an alarm bell off in my head. And I was like, this is so right. So 80% are getting things wrong. So what you have to do is, if you look around you, and just in life, in business, 80% of people that you see are actually getting it wrong. No matter what front people put up, and the world's full of successful businesses that are a payroll away from going bust. But 80% of people were getting it wrong. They weren't flying. And so that struck a chord that I had to do something to stand out and be part of the 20%. How do I be part of that 20%? And that's what it was. It was about standing out. And so then I started looking towards, what can I do to stand out? What can I do to make myself different? And that's when I started looking for different things. And one of the things was, at that time, it was the IKBBI. And I thought, okay, there's an organization surrounded about, by what I did, an installation. And I thought, I'm going to take what they've got on board and sell that and use that as to help my business stand and just make me different from everybody else. And so that was the start of the journey of being different. But it was this 80-20 principle of the split. And then it carried on, and it was amazing how often that percentage came up in my face when I was working. One of the things I'd do is, so we all have this phrase about not working in your business and on your business and know what's the right way around and what you're meant to do. And I felt it's easy to be a busy fool, and every day there's so much in business that I learn that's just, it's just weeds. It's just stuff. So when I concentrate on that, 80% of your income comes from 20% of your work, and I really got focused in on that. And so I started focusing on this 20%. But then I looked at it in time as well, and I thought, so you take a 40-hour week, you take your lunch off, you've got 37 and a half hours. So 20% of that is 90 minutes a day. So 90 minutes a day, you could use the 80 minutes a day for the weeds, that's fine. But this 20%, this 90 minutes, if I focus on the things that are really important and that are going to move the business forward, then at least every day I've done something that's going to move my business forward. Yeah. And so that's what I did. And when I started doing that from 2017 till earlier this year, when I stepped away from Liberty, things just grew and got better and better. We're better and better in the right way. We got the foundations right. It wasn't about growing for the sake of growing or just being busy for the sake of busy. We grew in a structured way, and we grew the brand, and it became a recognizable brand. And obviously we were being recognized with awards and things like that. And that all proved to me what I was doing was right. That was the right thing, the standing out, this being different to everybody else.
The award's something that just slots it in just through timing, or was that something that you kind of just latched onto because of the standing out? Because ultimately awards do dramatically give the authority of your business, doesn't it? Even if you've won an award within the industry, it's demonstrating that you don't want to be like the rest, just like everybody else. You are essentially wanting to stand out.
Yeah. When it came to that, I always remembered, you know, it all started with the IKBBI Awards, and I saw this company on the front of the magazine having won the Insulation Company of the Year. I was like, wow, what would that do for business to win that? Imagine doing that. And I thought, that's not going to happen. So what can I do? And then I discovered the Scottish Home Improvement Awards. I thought, okay, there we go. I'll roll the dice with that. I thought, I don't need to win it. I thought, even if I could just get in it, we get into the shortlisting. Well, that would make a difference. I could market that. I could, because again, I'm able to now focus on this side of the business. I'm not in the fit kitchens. I just need to make as much noise as I could. So, the Scottish Home Improvement Awards, we'll do the roll the dice with that. Cut a long story short, we did it. And we won that. It's all trade company. And so that was the start. And what I got off the back of that, then I understood, right, this helps me stand out. This makes people recognize, and this builds trust. Yeah. It's not that you still have to do. You still have to be good at what you do. Obviously, there's judging. And I mean, I've judged a few award things myself now. And there's a lot of work goes into that. And I take it seriously in what I do.
The fact that you've got the award, you kind of have to make sure you stand out for the award. And you're, like you say, we've won an award and we can back that up with our work.
It gave me confidence that I was obviously doing something right, that somebody somewhere was looking at us and seeing what we did. And it was just a nod from the industry, if you want. They're in that sector of saying, you're doing the right thing. Well done. Carry on. And that's what it did. I mean, it wasn't about, but you've got to use these things, because again, you're just spreading trust. It's not an ego thing. It's just about building your business and making people aware that, you know what, this is the kind of level of business we have. Other people are prepared to put their brand behind you and say, this is a really good business. But you've got to keep it.
One thing then with that is, it's interesting because from a social media point, for example, and marketing, the awards and everything like that, you obviously as a business owner, you do have to put yourself out there. And I think because there's a lot of, say, famous people that are very happy to put themselves out there, it's kind of just seen as the norm. It's not everything is in your comfort zone, is it either?
Absolutely not. I mean, there's very few people who... No, it depends on how many, once you get doing it, it's the habit, but obviously video and things like that. If you look at 80% of businesses across LinkedIn, if you want, use LinkedIn or any kind of social media, but on LinkedIn, 80% of them don't do video. So the people who are doing video will stand out. It just is what it is. And so, no, I would encourage anybody to do video. It's difficult. It's hard. You lost count of the number of times now you're sitting under your desk pressing that return button to post it. Because you're like, you're putting yourself out there. And when you put yourself out there, you're putting yourself out to be shot down. And everybody's a critic. So, but I've always found one of the things with LinkedIn that's different from all other social medias is that I find it a very positive place. I've seen posts with people who ended up being jumped all over. But on the whole, it's one of the most positive social medias that's out there. So that's good. It should be. You should be encouraging other businesses. And if you've not got nothing nice to say, don't say it.
I know you, one of my previous episodes, you've commented on it saying, as in, well, I can't remember what you said, but it was along the lines of kind of, I'll say it like you mean it. Because I said it, if you don't have time to spend 50 minutes on this, then I can tell you you're losing money. And it is that thing. With the sort of work I do, sometimes I'm like, have to shake someone and go, no, just sit there, think about it, and not just assume.
Most people don't like the truth. And in business as well, I find that that's where people will hide in the 80%. People will hide in the weeds. They wake up in the morning, they know what they're meant to do, they know they're meant to call that customer, and they don't. Why? Because it's an awkward conversation. And I can understand that. But it's that conversation. Imagine if you did that conversation at 8 o'clock in the morning and you got rid of it. What are you going to do the rest of the day when you've got that off your back? So it's the 80-20 thing for me is about, yeah, it's about all of that kind of stuff, is doing the things that are going to move your business forward. And if that's what things is going to help you, then that's what you need to do. And that's what I found it works for me. And yeah, it's just it's difficult. There's nothing easy in business, but putting yourself out there and, as I said, standing out. And these are all the things that are going to push you in a different direction. It brings different problems with it. As you say, people feel awkward on social media.
Yeah, with the videos, to be honest, pre-Christmas, as I was doing, I ended up doing them live just because I can't go back and edit them. Because otherwise, you can spend a lot of time doing them and you're going to make some mistakes and, you know, everybody's. But actually, at the same time, I think one of the first videos, for example, that I put out, my wife, she was like, "Have you not seen that video?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "But when, just before it starts, it obviously it has me like with my eyes half open and like my eyes is rolled up. It's obviously just that all point pit." And I'm like, "Well, I can't do anything about that." And then you find that in some ways, the authenticity of it and not the polished element of it actually benefits you in some ways. So
yeah,
I think all video for standing out are really important for any business.
Definitely. But yeah, all these different things, standing out, awards, these were all good. And these were good for myself and for Liberty, and it built trust. And so that was, we did that from 2017 right up to the end of this year. But then again, things go in cycles, for, you know, different cycles in life. And I found myself getting to a stage where, but I'd probably, I felt I'd gone as far as I could, as far as I could with Liberty. Obviously, it's not just me. There's lots of different people within the company, and the company was it was in the best place it had ever been, and great staff, and it was all working like a charm. And, you know, I mean, we're a recognized brand across the UK for installation. And so I decided, okay, let's do something different. I felt I just felt at that time, it was, if I was ever going to make the leap of stepping away from Liberty, then this was the time, because everybody's job was safe. The company was doing well. And so that was me just taking, again, just a different direction and taking another leap of faith.
Like, say, when you moved out from Liberty, you essentially built Liberty to, how I would phrase it, as being exit ready. You were working on the business rather than just in the business, while you were trying to grow, taking it back, getting that control, and then scaling it to a point where essentially it runs without you. And to some respect, like you had someone running it over here, and your element, what you said, you tapered that down, your involvement to some extent.
Processes were put in place. That's what had to happen. I had to end up in a situation where anybody could do it. And yes, I found myself creating that subconsciously, maybe, but creating all of these things, putting all these processes in place so that it did kind of, other than obviously the installation, but my side of things would pretty much run itself. Obviously, in other words, work that needs to be done every day on things.
With you being over the other side of the web, it forced you to delegate, didn't it, in a sense?
Absolutely. That was one of the harder things I ever went through as well, was being the installer. I was an installer for over 20 years, so everything was done exactly the way I wanted to do it. And then suddenly you have other fitters coming in and things being done differently, just being done differently. And I just, I found it really difficult. It was, there's no doubt about it. But I also at the same time knew, no, I mean, sometimes good enough is good enough. And I had to, it can't always be just because you would do it a different way. So, yeah, I just had to step back and just let it happen. And you know what was amazing? How it worked. I mean, me over here and Liberty over there, it ran like that for 14 years. It worked. It was a great model. And so, I mean, that was always funny when COVID first hit and everybody's going on about working remotely and going on Zoom. And I'm like, I've been doing this for years. What's the big deal? Do you mean? So it's, no, it was something that worked. And obviously, I gradually obviously set these things up so that I could slowly come away from the business. Not intentionally doing it that way. It probably a realization that that is what was happening, and I was able to do it. And so I made that decision coming up towards the end of the year. Didn't know what I was going to do, but I thought, no, I need something different. I needed something to, a different challenge to put myself out there. I had to be, and I was too comfortable. I had to be something different. So I met Christopher Hackett from Classic Marble, and I've known Christopher for years, and obviously stepping away, the conversations with Christopher. And then the opportunity came up as to he was looking to take the Sensetech anti-slip shower tray to the US. And so that's what led to the opportunity for me to become managing director of Sensetech USA, and a whole other chapter in my career, exciting chapter. A scary chapter. It's North America. Do you know what I mean? But it's interesting, and I'm learning a whole other set of skills, which is good. And I feel excited by it and refreshed by it. And I'm something that I'm no longer just going through the motions. There's, even in this period of setup, there's so many things I'm involved in and learning, and it's just different, and it's good.
Where you were running the Liberty, essentially being far away. Yeah, like you say, you essentially ended up working on the business as opposed to running in it.
Yeah.
So it gives you that kind of springboard. You're not stuck in the room.
It's an e-commerce business. So there is less weeds to get caught up in, really. To me, it's more focusing on getting that message out there and things that are going to move the business forward and the brand forward and help people understand just what a fantastic product that this is. It has a US, UK and EU patents, and they don't hand them out for nothing. This is a special product and one like no other. It's a shower tray like no other. It really is. And it's something special.
I know when we spoke before, you were saying about when you went to Vegas to do the show, and there was some others that joined you from the UK as well. And I think you were saying that went really well, obviously for you guys, but also from the UK side of things as well.
Yeah, we were the pioneers of the UK pavilion at KBiz. Now, KBiz is a huge show, an absolutely huge show. And I've been there a number of times. Again, I used going to KBiz when I was with Liberty as standing out, is how many UK installers were in Las Vegas at a kitchen and bathroom show? None. So why should I go? For that reason. So that's why I was there. But when I was there, I fell in love with it. It's a fantastic show, and the things that you could see and the people you meet, and I would encourage anybody from the UK to consider KBiz. Even just for a visit, just to see. It's not about becoming an exhibitor, but just to go and learn and see how other people do business. You could learn so much. And that's what I did. And so this time coming over and exhibiting for the first time with Sensetech, I loved every minute of it. Very different from actually going to a show and seeing all these different things I found it was kind of weird being stuck in the one place. I knew all what was out there, but I had to be there and say, hi, come and see the tray. This was our American flag that drew people in. And so we had, being there and talking about that, and it was afterwards, I thought, God, I've been here for 4 days, I've seen nothing. I thought, oh, wow. But you know what? It was really good. It was the other guys that were there were fantastic. It was a great bunch and a great experience. And I encourage other businesses, definitely get in touch with Tom Reynolds from the BMA and just ask questions. Yeah, it might not be, might be out of reach this year, or too expensive, or not where your marketing budget's going to go, or maybe you don't want to open up in the US, but you will learn so much. You really will, and it will help you in the UK. It's always great to expose yourself to different things and different ideas, and KBiz is absolutely that. It's not a jolly. it's hard work.
I was in a Birmingham this year. I sit behind a desk most of the day. So standing before the game straight was a little hot, but it was a great experience. But it, like you said, to be fair, I had people say, why would you go to something like that?
How many accountants were there?
It was an experiment as well. Sometimes these things work, sometimes they don't. But I've had people reach out since that didn't even go to the show, but heard I was there and just want to say hello. What I generally do with a lot of business owners is it's not until the problem starts hitting home that all of a sudden everything kind of hits the fan and it's, I need help. Because most people are just go, like you said, that 80% of the status quo, well, it is what it is, and we just carry on until we can't carry on or there's a problem and things like that. But at the same time, like you say, you have the other 20% that are actively out there looking for new products, new ways of doing things.
Yeah, and they're at the KBB show. I mean, that 20%, it's just a different outlook. Step out of your comfort zone, go out of these things and expose yourself. And you'll find it's not half as scary as you think it is. And you maybe learn something. And so I'm always up for these kinds of things. And yeah, take my hat off to yourself for doing that. Because as I say, you're the only accountant that was there. And that says something. I mean, and that's worth a conversation.
Appreciate it.
I think what it is it's hard to measure. How do you get your return on investment?
We saw each other at the BIKBVI conference. And even with that, we've had people say, what's the benefit of you being there? And for me, the more I can understand the problems that this type of business is going through, the easier I can help them in other ways. There are all specific problems, all different ways of dealing with them. I think it's very easy for business owners to just get caught with the status quo as everybody's doing really well, so nobody wants to say if they've had a bad month or anything like that. And obviously, I generally hear that when things are bad, or I can already see that they're not great. But people don't want to express that out in the world.
If you're a tradesman, walk into any wholesaler and, how are you doing? Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Everybody's doing fantastic. They really are. It's amazing. Never met a guy that's struggling yet. Because you're keeping your cards close to your chest. But what you'll find is if you trust that 80-20 thing, the 80% of people are struggling. They really are. And they're just getting by and they're not running businesses that they set out to run. But there is a way. It's about changing that mindset and trying to think differently and being different to everybody else. That's what's going to attract people to you.
You said earlier, you said it was in 2017, was that where's the business going? And it is that whole kind of vision, having that vision of where you see the business going, ultimately allows you to take the business where you want it to go.
I've always wanted to do stuff. I've never, ever been money driven. And so just picking up a wage was never enough. That wasn't what any of this was all about. Money, to me, money's a byproduct of what you do. So money was never the focus. It was the challenge. It was a joke. If I could do this, if I could just get there, if I can, I mean, it could be something as simple as KBiz. I thought about KBiz for years before I went. So imagine going, and eventually I thought, what are you doing? Just go. And it was a huge amount of money to spend. The Vegas isn't cheap.
It isn't.
But it's not cheap. But again, how do I measure that investment? I can't. I just need to trust my gut that I'm doing something that everybody else isn't in my industry and being a UK business. And there's plenty of installers there from the US, obviously. But again, it's just about standing out and being different. And that was one of the things.
Either the biggest challenge at the moment or is it getting that brand awareness in the US?
Yeah, you know what? It's building trust, I think. We're coming into America. I always use the phrase, I'm not coming into America like the Beatles. We're not trying to take over. We're trying to be in. I'm trying to come in and just build brand awareness. Make people aware of just what a fantastic product this is and how it's a product. It can help people. It can change lives. It can give confidence when you're in the shower. Being in the shower, it's a vulnerable place. I mean, so the last thing you want to be doing is falling and hurting yourself. Most accidents in the home happen in the bathroom. Now, the studies don't break down what areas of the bathroom, but it doesn't take a genius to work out that when you're in a wet, soapy condition with your eyes closed in the shower, the statistics of accidents are a lot higher there. And so, but the SenseTech tray reduces that risk by a ridiculous amount. And that's what it's got to be about. And there's a lot of, be it young kids or elderly people, and for all sorts of reasons, everybody, I mean, wants to be safe. And so it's just, the hard bit is getting that message across and in a non-salesy way. I'm not trying to sell anything to anybody. I just want to make people aware, because this is a product that you should have in your life. It should be as standard. Anti-slip trays should be as standard. I mean, I'm not telling everybody to buy a SenseTech tray. As crazy as that sounds, I'm telling everybody to buy an anti-slip tray. With a shower, most people have got what they've got. It comes with the house. I mean, it's there. But it also, it's the number one thing that it's the most awkward thing in the world to change. It's not just like, oh, well, let's change a tap. Well, we'll go to the store, we'll buy a new tap, and I hire somebody to change over, or maybe it's a DIY project to do ourselves. But a shower tray is a nightmare. As in, because it involves screens, it involves tiles, it's all these things. And so it's about getting it right. And sometimes, obviously, there's renovations and you have to change and you should change it for safety. But it's about education of the house builders. And if you are doing a renovation, that should be your first thing. And that's where you should spend your money, because that's the thing that you never, ever want to replace. And the beauty of SenseTech that's different to other anti-slip shower trays that like spray on or stickers on it is that the dimples that create the anti-slip effect are there for the lifetime of the tray. So they don't wash off, they don't rub off, whereas stickers or paints or that grit, they have to be compliant. And because of the design of them, they attract dirt and they hold on to dirt. And they're slimy, but when there's dirt on there, then that creates the slippiness. And so it's doing the opposite of why you got the thing. And so what do? Well, you start scrubbing it harder. And when you start scrubbing it harder, you start wearing the surface off. But you're doing one area more than another. And so that area is a wee bit slippier than that area. And you know what? It's just about putting out education out there that, as I say, you really need to look at this. And if we put these kinds of trays in first time, they never need to be replaced. And they are, as I say, well, there for the lifetime of the tray. And when it comes to SenseTech, you're as safe as you're going to be. What was better than that? Being safe in the shower, knowing that you could put your kids in and you can relax. Or you know that your parents aren't going to fall in the shower. Do you know what I mean? We get older, you're more unstable. It's a great product, and it's my job to let people know about it. That's how I see my job. It's just to look. And people will make their decisions based on. I believe once they understand about SenseTech, that I hope people get as excited as I am about it. And it's a great, it's a great product. It's a great opportunity for me. I'm loving every minute of it. Absolutely loving every minute. It's 4 months and it's gone like that. Really has. Time's flying, and it's been good fun. And Christopher's a great guy to work alongside. So yeah, brilliant. Thanks.
That sounds great. If you were to be able to send a message to yourself, say 10 years ago, what would it say and why?
I went through a period, if I look at my business career and my work career, it was those whole periods where I just was on the treadmill. And I think what I've learned, and I have to remind myself every single day, is about stepping off that treadmill and standing out. And the phrase I always repeat to myself is, nothing great ever happens in your comfort zone. It just doesn't. And so I try to stick to that and remind myself of that when I'm feeling I'm away to do something, or I want to speak to somebody, tell me, oh my God, there's whoever. Oh, I mean, it's so easy and not to, and but you have to step. You'd be amazed what would happen if you can just do it. It's even coming over here. It's even moving to Vancouver. Do you know what I mean? That was a huge step. I had a wife and four young kids. What was the worst that could happen? So I've now got that kind of mentality that what's the worst that could happen? Just go for it, really. And I'd try that as hard as I can. Will I succeed? Do I succeed every time? No, there's lots of times you crash and burn. But if I could win more often than I lose, or all of these things just help you. It's just all part of standing out and being different. Your biggest enemy is your own mind. It really is. And stepping out of your comfort zone is actually stepping out your own mind.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And just not caring. It's hard not to care. You do care, but it's just doing it. And I've always found that it's, if you face your fear and do it, then it works.
Like you say, you'll win more times than you lose.
You will. And when you do lose, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. I listen a lot to Gary Vaynerchuk, and he goes on about 8th place trophies. And we're on the program to win. We're on all out to lose, and losing's bad. Losing's good. That's where the growth happens. I mean, you learn a lot when you lose. And it's just the same when MFI happened. I learned a lot there. When it happened again, did I learn a lesson? It's not probably not. But Bath Store happened as well. We lost a lot of money with Bath Store. But these were the times that I really learned when things went wrong. And you take what you've learned and you apply that.
Had it not happened, you may have ended up in a situation where you were still self-employed, wandering along.
Just going along on that treadmill. Maybe not. But it definitely forced my personality to be different and stand out.
Well, but it pulls you into focus a little bit, doesn't it? Into what you want from your life as such.
So
there's loads of little nuggets in there for everybody to have a listen to and give them some food for thought.
You know, I'm any kind of expert. I'm an expert in my journey, and that's all. But if anybody wants to reach me, they can get me on LinkedIn, or they can email me at mark@sensei.com.
I'll put your information within the show notes as well.
It's been really good, Kevin. It's great to see yourself stepping outside your comfort zone. And I applaud that. I really do.
It is a bit different, but I've enjoyed it so far. It's a little bit harder work than I thought it was going to be as well. But
it's been good.
And it's really nice. And I'm really glad that you were able to come on, to be honest. Because it is, like you say, when you spoke about Gary Vee and things like that, it's very easy to get programmed into the celebrity element of, only the top 1% can do this. Yeah, and like you say,
you're trying to say I'm not a celebrity.
Don't know. I should have known. Yeah. But no, it's so easy to get caught in your own mind, like you said earlier.
It's hard. Everybody's different, and it is difficult. Nobody's saying this. It's easy to treat all the time. We're all different people, and we all have different challenges behind us, and risk taking means different things to different people. If you've got families, mortgages, all these things come into play as to whether you'll take a risk or whether you won't. But standing out and doing things differently, or focusing on the 20 rather than the 80, you know what, it doesn't always have to cost money. And social media, the last time I checked, was free. I encourage people to look at the 20.
Well, thank you very much for me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Armin. I appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to the KBB Unstoppable Business Owner podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to follow, subscribe, and share this podcast. To discover more about how to create an exit-ready business, I would like to invite you to join Kevin on his next workshop, How to Become an Unstoppable Business Owner. Join Kevin by visiting kevindbannister.co.uk/workshop.